Welcome to Pucela Escocia, the only English language podcast dedicated to Real Valladolid. Here is your host, Martin Dublin.
Hello and welcome along to the Pucela Escocia podcast. I am indeed your host, Martin Devlin, and it's a pleasure to have you all back again after a couple of weeks' break over Christmas and New Year. Now, there's loads to get through, so let's not delay any further at all.
Coming up this week on the Pucela Escocia podcast.
The matches came thick and fast as we finally waved goodbye to a horrendous 2020 and welcomed in a new year. We'll take a spin round the fixtures and catch up on all the action in the league and cup, including chatting with a very special guest. Following on from last week, where we discussed La Liga Lowdown's great work, the spotlight will fall on another essential Twitter account that you should be following. That's all coming up on episode 4 of the Pucela Escocia podcast. Christmas and New Year is a busy time, so I wasn't able to provide regular updates of what's been going on in the world of the Blanky Violetas, but let's recap now on all the matches that have taken place since our last episode. After back-to-back wins against Osasuna in the league and Club Deportivo Cantolagua in the cup, and yes, I have learned how to pronounce it properly, but not until the last episode was released, Real Valladolid travelled south to Andalusia to take on Sevilla at the fabled Estadio Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan. Going into this match, Pucela were sitting in 17th place, which wasn't great, while their opponents were in 6th and chasing a top 4 spot. It's fair to say that Lopetegui's squad were perhaps falling short of their own high standards set over the last few years, but they are the reigning Europa League champions and one of the strongest teams in the league. They held a 44 wins to 28 advantage over Real Valladolid, with 20 draws in their 92 previous meetings. At home, the Sevillans were particularly dominant over Pucela, posting 32 wins in 46 matches. Real Valladolid had only managed to emerge victorious on 6 occasions away from home. Sergio set up his side in the traditional 4-4-2 formation, with Jordi Masip in goals, Raul Carnero, Jawad El Yamik, Bruno Gonzalez and Pablo Hervias in front of him. The midfield comprised of Oscar Plano on the left, Fede San Emeterio and Roque Mesa in the middle, and Fabian Orellana on the right. Up front, Marcos Andre partnered Sean Weissman. Real Valladolid entered this match as the only team in La Liga yet to record a clean sheet, and there was an early scare on 8 minutes when Lucas Ocampos broke through for the hosts and stared down Masip in a 1v1 situation, but he chipped the goalkeeper and the ball came back off the bar and Youssef En-Nesyri was unable to head it into the net. However, they made the breakthrough in the half-hour mark when San Emeterio was adjudged to have handled the ball in the box when Sevilla swung a free kick into the area. En-Nesyri appeared to header it onto the elbow of Fede, but replays after the match showed that it did in fact hit the midfielder on the face. However, the penalty was given, and curiously, that made 5 penalty awards to Sevilla in the last 6 matches between the sides.
Modern life is challenging enough without introducing insane conspiracy theories into the daily grind.
Oh, okay!
But that's enough of that already. Ocampos stepped up and sent Masip left while putting his spot kick right to give his side the lead. Sergio's men didn't really threaten at all in the first half, and their first main chance came less than 10 minutes into the second, through Marcos Andre. Hervias's ball over the top saw the Brazilian lose his marker Jules Koundé before attempting an audacious back heel which came off the base of the post, and the defence was able to scramble it away. However, the waning moments of the match produced a moment of absolute magic which was certainly worth the wait, and it came from an unlikely source. A very unlikely source. Tony Villa had been body-checked by Sevilla substitute Nemanja Gudelj, who was lucky to escape with just a yellow card in my opinion, while Villa was left with a bloodied face. Sergio had made all of his 5 substitutions already, so he was forced to leave Tony Villa on the field. Michel's resulting free kick was headed behind by Diego Carlos and, with 3 minutes to play, Real Valladolid had won a corner. The ball was delivered in by Hervias from the right and headed out from a scrum of players which included El Yamik and Sevilla's Luke de Jong. The ball fell kindly for left-back Carnero, who struck a thundering volley into the top corner past the outstretched arms of Sevilla keeper Yacin Bono and into the net to claim his first ever goal in La Liga and a point of maximum importance for his team as the match ended in a 1-1 draw. There was less joy to be had in the run-up to Christmas, 3 days later, as Barcelona came calling to the Jose Thuria in what was for them a period of crisis. But then, aren't Barcelona and their constant craving for attention always in some sort of crisis? I didn't manage to watch this match live. I had to watch it late at night when I got home from work, and to be perfectly honest, I didn't actually finish watching it. It was a classic example of Sergio's almost paralysing fear of attacking the big teams. Real Valladolid had lost just once in their previous 7 matches across league and cup competitions, while Barcelona had endured a difficult December by their standards, losing at Cadiz, being dismantled 3-0 at home by Juventus in the Champions League, and drawing against Valencia at Camp Nou. But rather than use the momentum built up by their good run of form, Real Valladolid sat off their opponents and played right into their hands, allowing the visitors to dominate possession, grow into the game, and eventually win by a comfortable margin of 3-0. It was one of those frustrating performances where we showed Barcelona too much respect and failed to take advantage of a good chance to grab a morale-boosting positive result against a high-calibre team. The final match of 2020 pitted Real Valladolid against Cádiz at the Estadio Ramón de Carranza, our first visit to that stadium since November 2017 when both teams played in Segunda. That afternoon, an early goal from Alex Fernandez on 6 minutes was enough to separate them in a match that also saw Luis Mi sent off for the visitors. In this edition, there was less drama, far less in fact, as the teams played out a 0-0 draw. Masip and Plano were the only survivors from that 2017 encounter to feature in the starting lineup for Real Valladolid, while they were joined by Tony Villa, who made a substitute appearance but had played the full 90 minutes in 2017. For Cadiz, the hero of that day, Fernandez, was introduced to the action at the start of the second half in this game. Little to say about this match except a point gained and, most importantly though, the first clean sheet of the season. As the old saying goes, just like London buses, you wait ages for one clean sheet in the league and then two come along at once. At least, I think that's the saying anyway. I could be wrong. It happens quite a bit. Real Valladolid brought in the new year with a trip to Getafe to face former goal-scoring legend Jaime Mata. José Bordalás' side were also struggling to recapture their form from last season, and Mata was somewhat off the boil too, with only 2 goals since the start of the campaign, having grabbed 14 in his first season with the men in blue and 11 last year. An unfamiliar 4-1-4-1 look was adopted by the Blanquivioletas, with Masip retaining the armband and protected by a back line of Nacho, El Yamik, Bruno and Luis Pérez. San Emeterio played the protector to the back four and had Tony Villa, Kike Pérez, Roque Mesa and Jota ahead of him. Weissman plied his trade alone up front and grabbed his 3rd goal of the season after he diverted Kike Pérez's cross from the left past Getafe goalkeeper Ruben Yanez. Man of the match went to Masip, who kept the Getafe attack at bay with a string of confident saves to preserve a 1-0 win for his side, their first against this opposition since May 2017. The team was back in action 3 days later as they travelled down to the Costa del Sol to take on Marbella in the second round of the Copa del Rey. Sergio aligned his men in 4-4-2, with Roberto coming in to replace Masip in goals, and there was a first appearance for young left-back Ignasi Villarasa, who was joined in defence by the experience of Javi Sanchez, Joaquin and Pablo Hervias. A strong, almost first-choice midfield was made up by Oscar Plano, Ruben Alcaraz, Michel, who captained the side, and Waldo. Sergio Guardiola returned up front and he was partnered by Kuki Salazar, who came on as a substitute against Canto Lagua in the previous round and grabbed himself his first senior goal. These two teams had met at the Estadio Antonio Lorenzo Cuevas last season in the same competition, and it took a late goal from Turkish striker Enes Unal to force the match into penalties, and Pozella prevailed by a score of 4-1 on spot kicks. It wasn't any easier this time round, to be honest, as the hosts stifled Real Valladolid's advances in the first half to leave it goalless at the break. The second half burst to life and Salazar benefited from Waldo's cutback to net from 8 yards out after 52 minutes to give Pozella the lead, but they were pegged back by a penalty. The onrushing Roberto slid in at the feet of Alfred Planas, who hit the deck. The penalty was scored by Esteban Granero, a figure who'll be very familiar to fans of the Spanish game as he's played for teams such as Real Madrid, Getafe, Real Sociedad, Espanyol and, oddly, Queen's Park Rangers, the season that they were relegated from the English Premier League. Oscar Plano put the visitors ahead again in the 74th minute, and again it was Waldo with the assist, cutting the ball back from that same left side of the box, and Plano's first touch was beautiful to drag it in front of the defender and earn some good space before slamming the shot home. There were further chances. Villarasa drew a good save from Alejandro Santomé, and Tony Villa slalomed his way between their right back Nacho and Planas before hitting the bottom of the post. Sergio Benito came on as striker and he hit the woodwork too, so the tally could have been quite high, but, and there's always a but with Real Valladolid, isn't there? Just when it looked like victory was in the bag, Marbella grabbed an equaliser in the final minute of the 90 from, get this, Jahir, Gudinho, Lopez, Irving. Phew, I managed that first time. I wouldn't like to try and fit his name on the back of a shirt. A Marbella corner caused problems in the Pozzella box, and they made heavier weather of clearing it than the rain that was lashing down on the pitch, and Irving, or just Gudinho, as I've been told he goes by, stabbed the ball home in the crowded area. It seemed that a cup upset may be on the cards, and don't forget that this was the round where Segunda B teams sprang many surprises. Getafe lost to Cordoba, Celta were destroyed 5-2 by Ibiza, and Cornea dumped Atleti out of the competition, so anything was possible. The first period of extra time ended with nothing to separate the two teams. However, Plano proved to be the hero in the second portion of extra time as he gathered a pass from Michel and exploited a gap in the Marbella backline by racing into the box and stroking the ball with composure past Santomé to spare Real Valladolid's blushes. That earned Pucela a place in the next round as they travelled to Ibiza to take on Peña Deportivo, or to give the team its full title, Sociedad Cultural Recreativa Peña Deportivo Santa Eulalia. Whew. I look forward to having to pronounce that repeatedly. Come back, Club Deportivo Canto Lagoa. All is forgiven. You are indeed listening to the Pucela Escocia podcast. And now that you're almost caught up on all the matches that have happened since the last episode, you may have noticed that there is one that we haven't covered yet. That was Sunday's match at home to Valencia, which ended in a 1-0 win for the visitors, which was unfortunate from a Real Valladolid perspective. And that was thanks to a goal from midfielder Carlos Soler in the second half. Now, if you had the chance to check out the Pucela Escocia website over the weekend, you may have seen the preview article where we spoke to Valencia fan Sean Neville. He earned the dubious honour of being the first person to ever be interviewed on the website, and he must be a glutton for punishment because he joins us again now to chat about what went down at the José Zorrilla over the weekend. So welcome aboard, Sean, and thanks for coming onto the podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Martin. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Now, I thought the best thing to kick things off would be to set the scene for our listeners and just how we met. It was kind of by chance, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit of a... We just happened to be back, getting the same flight back on the same day, really, wasn't it? I think it was the only flight back to Scotland as well from Valencia, though.
That's right, because it was January 2019, and my darling wife had surprised me with a suggestion that we should go to Valencia for a long weekend, and it happened to coincide with when Real Valladolid were playing Valencia at Mestalla. So we're kind of we're chukters up here, you know, and we don't have a big airport that we can fly to all these exotic places from. So we had to come down to Edinburgh and had a great weekend in Valencia. Really enjoyed it. The match was a 1-1 draw, and I seem to remember us being very lucky indeed to grab a point from that match. And on the way back, we ended up getting sat next to each other in the same row in the same flight, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just a good coincidence, is it? You know, it's lucky me travelling myself, you know, just the single seat next to you and your wife, you know, just all fell into place nicely, didn't it? It saved us being bored on the way home, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, there was some good conversation on the way back, which was excellent. So in the article, you sort of touched on how you became a Valencia fan, but would you just be able to refresh our memories, or anyone who didn't catch the article, just to set the scene as to how you got into Valencia?
So it was basically what I think we'll say 2015. My granddad decided to move over to Valencia, so in 2016 we went over for the first time just in the summer, obviously just to see, you know, see the new house and everything. And I thought, you know, he was always happy for us to come over, so I thought this was a great chance, you know, to get over to a regular team in Spain. I'd been to games previously in Spain, but it was when I was much younger. It was Barcelona in 2008 and Real Madrid in 2012. But, you know, that was the big two, you know, it's the big two that everyone goes and sees. So, you know, Valencia was a bit of an outsider in a way at the time as well. When Granda moved over there, I think Gary Neville was still in charge, which obviously we all know wasn't a very good time for either Neville or Valencia. Nearly falling down the leagues, you know. It was, I don't know why they even took him on. But yeah, so then obviously after visiting them in 2016, I went over again, which happened to be in 2017 in January when there was a winter break in the Scottish Premiership. So it didn't mean I was missing an Aberdeen game at the time. And then obviously I just carried on year after year. As, you know, I could only get over maybe once, maybe twice a year if I was lucky, but always once a year at least for a Valencia match. And that's where the Valencia followings come from, you know, is to follow the results at home, watch all the games. So it's, I'm glad I got into it. I've always loved Spanish football anyway, so good to have a team and a great reason to pick the team as well, I suppose, with having connections over there now.
Yeah, I'm always really interested in how people who have a love of Spanish football in general, how they tend to start off supporting a team like Barcelona, Real Madrid, or even Atletico. But then, I'm familiar with quite a few people who started off like that and have gone down different routes and have found a club in a different way. So, yeah, I'm always really interested as to how somebody gets involved with a team outside the really big names. Although, I guess you could consider Valencia with their success, one of the bigger names in Spanish football. So just thinking about Valencia's season so far, it hasn't really gone that smoothly. What's been your thoughts on how they fared up to this point?
It's been a very, it's hard to describe the season, how it's went really. It's been so up and down. It started by a good win at home to Levante, you know, 4-2 to start the season. You know, it's just, it's looking positive straight away, beating the rivals first off. It's always what you want. And I think the first weekend we were sitting top of the table, but as we know, that doesn't mean anything, sadly. But then after that, you know, we lost to Celta Vigo, which I think Aspas scored both goals in that game. So, you know, when Aspas is on form, I guess there's sometimes just no way of stopping him, really.
We've fallen victim to him a few times as well. I think most teams have.
Oh yeah, majority of La Liga definitely fallen under that, sadly. But then even, you know, it was kind of topsy-turvy at the start with the first four. We drew 1-1 with Huesca, which I think all in all, you're wanting to qualify for any European competition, whether it be the Champions League or Europa League. Who we expect to beat teams like Huesca, you know, it's starting out with a draw at home and then beating Real Sociedad, you know, it was quite up and down there. And then I think it was the international break and then we came back and lost 3 in a row again, maybe to European rivals. I think Betis were maybe looking to be in European spot contention at the start, but they've went downhill from the way they started. You know, they've not put themselves in the relegation battle, they kind of just found themselves in a mid-table battle, I think, and then losing to Villarreal, I think. Berejo maybe he did score in that game, yeah, so that was obviously, you know, that just made the defeat 10 times worse. The player that we didn't want to sell, and I don't think he wanted really to leave the club, but he was kind of forced out for whatever reason. Only certain people know. And so it was harder to lose that game, and then getting the draw against Getafe and then a win against Real Madrid, you think, okay, you know, we're coming back here, you know, this is it, we're going to properly start the season now. And then we had quite a bad form and drawing and losing games, and then we didn't win again till Sunday night against Valladolid. So it's been a really up and down season, and the fact that we're sitting just above, well, we were just above the relegation zone before Sunday, and the win moved us further away from it. But, you know, it's still a dangerous time. So not too impressed with the season so far, I think, by the standards of the club. But I don't think we can help some of the things that have been going on behind closed doors, you know, the things that no one sees other than the staff. So it's been a hard one, but hopefully maybe this win will actually progress on it this time.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the things that must frustrate Valencia fans most is their lack of consistency, because they are actually a really, really good side, and they've lost a lot of quality, especially in the summer, but there's still a huge amount of quality in there. And there's just been so many kind of up and down points to their season. I mean, that win over Real Madrid was, quite frankly, one of the most bizarre games I've ever sat and watched, with the three penalties and the own goal, and the whole thing was just crazy. But the fact that they came out on top, you know, and they beat the champions, and you know, they were at home, and Mestalla is such an amazing place to go and watch football. It must be really quite eerie for the players with no fans there, you know, and they ran Atletico Madrid close, you know, just losing 1-0. But it's that kind of patchy form, which I think, you know, that's a fairly good sort of Scottish term to describe a lot of a lot of teams in the world when they just can't seem to get it going consistently. But coming into this match, Valencia had quite a superior record over Real Valladolid, and you know, when I sit down to do my previews and that sort of thing, and I look at how we stack up head to head against teams, it always seems to be like we're massively on the losing side, and that was certainly the case here. Although Valencia had won just the three games coming into the season, they pretty much own Real Valladolid with 40 wins and 24 losses and 24 draws. So it was tipped really heavily in favour of Valencia. You guys also hadn't lost to Real Valladolid in the last 10 matches. There was 5 wins and 5 draws. So given that both teams had struggled to find consistent positive results, what were your expectations coming into this game? Were you quite confident, thinking this is when we get back on track? Or was it just a case of, I don't know, hang on for dear life and see what happens?
I wasn't too confident. I mean, I know we had quite three games in 1 week, you know, about three games in 6 days. You know, we played Cadiz against at home on the Monday night, and then we were away in the cup as well on the Thursday night. So it was quite I know Valladolid were in the cup as well, but I feel like we had more of a tight schedule than Valladolid did. You maybe had a couple of rest days in between the cup and the league games, but when we went 1-0 down to Cadiz on the Monday night, I thought, this really going downhill here. And I thought if we did lose that game, that we maybe would have been coming into the Valladolid game with no manager. So that's how it seemed to be. That's like on Twitter, it seemed to be the word that was going around. You know, we looked like losing a couple more games and we won't have a manager. But I wasn't too confident on the game itself. I know the head-to-head favours Valencia, but recently, you know, with the recent form that Valladolid's just picked up in the last 2-3 games in the league, certainly, you know, been fairly playing well. So I thought, you know, that's why I did predict 1-0 Valladolid, but thankfully on my side I was wrong, not to your side, sorry.
There's always next time, I guess.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. But the cup games as well, you know, we had the easy 4-1 win, and it was Valladolid that actually went to extra time. I think, did you win 3-2 in the end, sorry? I think it was.
Again. That's right, yeah, but it did go into extra time, like you say, and this was a team, Marbella FC, that we struggled against last year and needed penalties when we played them in the same, you know, in the same stadium last year. Yeah, you make a very good point about the Copa del Rey games coming, you know, between the you know, sandwiched between the last two La Liga games, and we did have a couple of extra days rest playing on the Tuesday, which was the 5th, and you guys played on the 7th, so you only had a couple of days to recover. And given the fact that most of Spain's under, you know, 6 feet of snow at the moment, just all the kind of preparations for coming to a game away from home must be quite different, because I'm guessing that in Valencia the weather's not as bad as it has been in the other places, because I seem to remember we had when we played you at Mestalla in 2019, and we were both there, had friends who had driven down from Valladolid for the game, and it was -5 when they left Valladolid, and it was 15 degrees when they arrived in Valencia. So it was like a 20 degree swing there. But all these things kind of go into making life difficult for the away team. And I think, given the fact that they'd had quite a rocky spell on the run up to this match, and then playing on the road, you know, in these conditions, I think Valencia did very well. Now, we'd kind of jotted down some various points about the match, and I thought, I'll start by saying I thought it was very open in the first half, so both teams looked quite evenly matched, I'm sure you'll agree, and, you know, with them both kind of struggling and being in the same position roughly in the league, you know, the balance of play was shared quite equally, with both teams having chances at the start. What I thought was that neither team looked panicked, but there was slightly more urgency in how Valencia played. Now, do you think that's down to there being greater expectations on them to be further up the table? But with Real Valladolid, it's a case of this is kind of roughly where we, you know, where we're going to be all season.
Yeah, it's, I think maybe the determination in our minds, you know, I think the more you lose, you know, it's only going to get worse. And going into a January transfer window, going by the last transfer window, it's always a scary time for Valencia. Now you never know who's going to get sold next. But yeah, I think there's more determination from the Valencia side, knowing that they shouldn't be on level points, you know, with the bottom three. We're only ahead by maybe a couple of goals in it. Obviously, Elche had a couple of games in hand. But yeah, I think that Valencia's determination, I think, is what won them the game. I mean, in the best respect to Valladolid, you did more of a, I guess, I agree with you there, they're more of a mid-table side, and this is kind of where you're going to be most of the season. So I think maybe in the minds, you know, maybe that's in the minds of both players, but that's, you know, they shouldn't really be thinking like that. Valladolid should be thinking, go out and win, but I think the determination settled it for Valencia.
Yeah, I don't think either of us have been particularly unkind to Real Valladolid when we say they're kind of, you know, expected to be in the bottom half of the table, whereas Valencia aren't. And I just wondered if, you know, if that's got some sort of, you know, psychological kick at the rear end that Valencia, you know, don't want to be there, feel that they shouldn't. But they certainly set out very well at the start. They had their first half chance inside 3 minutes, and you know, it took a fairly desperate block to stop them getting their first shot and goal. And then we went up the other end of the field and hit the side netting just a few minutes later. So it was quite an open match from the get go. And what you often find is if there's two teams either in trouble or quite close to each other in the league, they sort of cancel each other out. But from a neutral standpoint, it would have been quite a good game to watch, because both teams sort of set their stall out nice and early. So a point I wanted to come to was about Jordi Masip, our goalkeeper. He made an incredible save from Carlos Soler in the first half, and that was immediately after your captain Jose Gaya had hit the frame of the goal. Now, his shot was just, that was something to behold. It just fell to him in the corner of the box, and he hit it first time with his left foot, and it rattled off the, you know, classic frame of the goal, you know, where the post meets the crossbar. Mm-hmm. But I was looking at the replays, and they're kind of inconclusive. They do slow it down quite a bit, and I was just trying to see if Masip got an ever so slight touch to that. What do you think? Did you see anything, or do you think it was just past his fingertips and onto the bar?
No, I think he did get his fingertips on it as well. I think it was a great, like you say, it was a great save from Carlos Soler's shot. And for Gaia, I hit it first time. I thought that was just, you know, the speed of the ball was so fast, but I think he definitely got a fingertip to that. I think he inches, it's, you know, slightest of touches, but I think that's the slightest of touches that makes a goalkeeper, you know, one of the best in the league. It's, you know, keeps him in the game, doesn't it?
Yeah, you often see it with keepers like Courtois, and like I'm not placing Matip by any stretch of the imagination in the same category as him, but you often see it with a player like Courtois, it's just the tip of the glove, you know, and it's just enough to, you know, just to divert it wide or to put it on the bar or something like that, or, you know, take it away from somebody's head as they come in to attack the back post or something like that. But Matip couldn't have known very much about it at all, because he had just, you know, at full stretch, seen that one go off the frame of the goal, and then it just came back with some more mustard on it from Soler, and that was a really good save in my opinion. But Soler for me is head and shoulders above all the other Valencia players at the moment, and he thoroughly deserved his goal when it did come. I'll come to the goal in a wee while, but I just want to talk a little bit more about his play. We touched on the fact that, you know, there was quite a bit of an exodus from Valencia over the summer, including captain Dani Parejo. Has there been this expectation that Soler is filling his shoes? And do you think that he's been able to do that so far? Obviously, you know, somebody who's so well respected by the club, you know, he's left, and as you've said, he probably didn't really want to, but was more kind of forced out. But for somebody like Soler, that's a massive amount of responsibility on his shoulders. How do you think he's handled that?
I think his general play of the game, you know, is very good. But that first, the goal that he scored on Sunday was his first goal in the league from open play this season. All his previous goals were penalties. Yeah. So I mean, in that sense, you know, taking the reign from Parejo and in the midfield, you know, scoring the penalties, which is what he's there to do. Obviously, is one of many things, but I think it'll take him time to be the same quality. But I think if he sticks in Valencia and he gets played in correct positions every week, you know, don't play him like some managers, put him on the left wing or something, you know, for some reason or other. But yeah, I think he's not quite the same quality as Parejo yet. But over time, you know, in starting every game, he's gonna get to that level. Maybe surpass it, because he's still at a young age. But I think if he's gonna surpass that, then there's probably a chance that he'll be sold. The way the transfers are going just now, it's just how you feel.
Yeah, and that would be quite sad in itself, because you think of some of the names that have passed through the Mestalla doors over the years, especially the time when they had David Villa and David Silva playing at the same time. And, you know, it just seems like every time Valencia are building something, other teams swoop in and they, you know, they kind of cherry pick the best players. And Valencia, with their well-documented financial problems, probably aren't in a position to be able to turn down big bids for their players. But in terms of retaining players, it would be good to see Valencia hang on to some of these guys, because it would just be great if there was a bit more of a challenge at the top of the league. You know, if you had four or five teams all in the mix, that would be great, rather than kind of the usual two or three. When Soler did make the breakthrough, it came on 76 minutes, so quite deep into the second half, and I'm not sure if they must have been thinking, you know, with that kind of maybe double save from Matip, what, you know, what are we going to have to do to score in this game? And I think you've got to credit Valencia for like not letting the heads drop and just continuing to plug away. But when the goal did come, Matip, he didn't cover himself in just as much glory as he had down at the other end. Now, I was looking at his positioning, and the ball just seemed to kind of be hit quite centrally from Soler. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was a great shot, but it was kind of straight down the middle. You'd really expect a goalkeeper to not be beaten right down the middle like that, would you?
Yeah. I mean, well, like you say, the shot was basically straight down the middle, and I do agree with you. I think it was his positioning that maybe put him off making a proper save. But yeah, a keeper of his quality, from what he'd done throughout the whole game up until that moment, you know, he should be an easy pat down on the ball, you know, bounce on the ground and catch again. But I don't know what went through his head at the goal. And then even after that, you know, he still made some great saves after the goal. So I think it maybe just a loss of, I don't know, concentration maybe for a split second.
He was possibly unsighted as well. I mean, we can't really tell. I didn't see a good replay that would, you know, show us kind of what he was saying. You know, quite often you get a replay from behind the goals, but there wasn't anything. So I'm not sure what that was, but that seems to be a bit of an unlucky goal for him in terms of like the goal posts, because he conceded a really, really awkward free kick in the first game of the season against Real Sociedad when we were winning 1-0, and it ended up being a 1-1 draw. It was a long range free kick which just kind of bounced in front of him, and he just made a complete mess of it. Now, in my mind, he's a really good keeper, but he just has these little mistakes, and I don't know why every keeper makes a mistake, but I think it's because he's possibly one of the better keepers in the league that when he does make a mistake, it jumps out a bit, and he's kind of getting he's getting the treatment on social media this week about how that was all his fault. But just can't be sure what it was, but luckily for Valencia and unfortunately for us, that was the difference in the game. It might not have been, because Valencia added a second goal in the closing minutes. Manu Vallejo, who kind of broke our hearts last time these teams played at the Jose Zaria, that was back in December 2019, I believe, when in match day 18, he scored in the 94th minute to grab a 1-1 draw for Valencia. And it looked like he was on the score sheet in this game after coming on as a substitute. But his goal was ruled out for offside in the build-up. Now, the replays show that there was a Valencia player who was marginally offside, and it must have been just by like a fingertip or something. Do you feel that that goal should have been allowed?
To be honest, at the time I didn't even notice the offside. I don't think anyone really noticed the offside intervening with the player. I think it should stand. Not just an even a biased like point of view, because the way that they look now with the VAR, and they've got the lines, you know, and they're like measuring like every little inch of the body, you know, of what part of the body they can score with, you know, just by that little slightest, you know, even like a toe, you know, that's offside. It's one of the bad points in VAR. It's one of the wrong things they're picking up, I think. They're trying to be too precise with all the stuff that they've got now to review the goals. And they took quite a while to check it, actually.
I made a note of that. So he got the ball in the net on the 87th minute, and it was in the 90th minute that they came back and said it was no goal. Now, that's a long time to be standing around in the cold in the Valladolid, you know, towards the end of the game. But I don't think that there's any bias in what you're saying at all, because my initial reaction was I hadn't seen anything in the build-up at all. So I was really surprised when I saw that that they weren't taking the restart kickoff immediately, and I thought, you know, what can they be checking? Because there was nothing in real time that suggested anything was off with that goal. But then when I saw a screen capture of what it was that they were looking at, and I just thought, actually, I hope that goal stands, because, you know, I'm a football fan first and foremost. You know, I love my club and I want them to do well, but as you're saying, when it comes down to just how fine the margins are, it's bordering on ridiculous, and it's spoiling the game. And I just thought, just, you know, go ahead and award it. You know, Valencia have been the better team, especially in the last 15 minutes or so once they got their goal. And it just seems a real shame to chalk a goal off from a team for something that was just so marginal. But I guess that's modern football, and that's the times that we're living in. But it doesn't mean that I have to like it. And I know a lot of people are just kind of getting fed up with this with this whole VAR thing. So having said that, up at the other end, there was something else that had a very fine margin to it as well, and that was when Fabian Orellana, who had arrived at Real Valladolid in the summer from Eibar, he's not really done as well as people were hoping so far. And he came on as a substitute in the second half, won a free kick against your right back, which was kind of right on the edge of the box. That was a Thierry Correa, I think.
Yep.
So he was a bit clumsy, kind of, and kind of think that maybe Fabian Orellana went down, quite easily, as you would expect a lot of footballers to do in that situation. But it won them a free kick in a pretty strategic position, and it was the little guy himself who whipped it in. And now, every man and his dog was in the box, and the ball could have gone anywhere, but came off the kind of the back of Sergi Guardiola's head. He was another guy who'd come on as a second half substitute and really hasn't kind of found his scoring form this year. But he was so close because he ran across the ball and just flicked it on with the back of his head, and it actually came off the post, and Valencia were able to clear it. But I guess, had that gone in, that would have probably made it even more irritating for Valencia to have that second goal chopped off, because that would have been the difference between, say, a 2-0 win and 3 points, and a 1-1 draw and a share of the points. So that was a bit of a heart-in-the-mouth moment for myself. What was that like for you as a fan of the team that was defending that 1-0 lead?
I think part of it, the feedback thing, no arguments to where players going to go down in that situation, especially in how late in the game I was. So you know it was going to be a dangerous one. I thought maybe the keeper could have came up for it as well, Since you were 1-0 down, I thought maybe you could try and salvage a point. It'd be a bit of a good story if Masip got a goal there. But when the ball came, it was a great ball into the box. I think Guardiola just flicked it with the back of his head by what you could see, and the keeper was stood still. I thought it was going in, but luckily for us, it did hit the post. But yeah, I think it would have been it would add more controversy to the game if that goal was to go in from, say, maybe a soft tackle, and then a VAR decision that was very, very tight. So I can imagine that would have been, we would have been very unhappy with it, but thankfully it hit the post and we got the 3 points. But yeah, especially at this stage of the season when it's as they say, it's one of them 6-pointers, is it? You really need to win these games. Wouldn't have been happy with the draw, especially the way a goal was chopped off just minutes before.
Mm-hmm. And you're saying adding to the controversy, as Spanish football fans, we all know how much the Spanish TV networks and radio stations, they just love to analyse everything to the nth degree. They would have been all over that offside decision for, at least 24 hours straight after that.
I'm sure it would have been on the papers as well. All the front of the papers the next day, the Marca, the AS, it would have been all over there.
That's it. National outrage. We love a bit of national outrage. you termed it as a 6-pointer, and I've been saying on the podcast for the last couple of weeks, is it too early to be calling matches crucial? But I think when you're at the bottom half of the league, every match is crucial because you're really just trying to chip away and get some daylight between yourself and the chasing pack. And it only takes maybe, putting two or three good results together to move up quite a bit. I mean, we've seen Valencia going up from, 17th in the league to, 13th?
Yeah.
13th or 14th, something like that.
14th,
14th. So that's a big jump. So they're now, they're now 3 points clear, and okay, Elche have a couple of games in hand, but they haven't won since it feels like about 2007 now after a good start. So you've got the fancy that they're going to keep dropping down that wee bit more. So it was crucial for Valencia to put some daylight between themselves, and that's quite a jump. And we've gone down from 15th, I think it was, and now we're just right on the cusp. So we're only 2 points ahead of Elche. So you start watching other teams' results, even in January, and you're looking at what's going on around you in the league and hoping that results go your way, because when your team's not doing the business on the field, sometimes you just have to keep the faith in other teams and hoping that the results fall in your favour. But I think we would have been extremely lucky to have got a point from that match. So I think it was a pretty fair outcome. one of the things I kept seeing on social media after the match was our fans referring to the side as being an aspirin, and I was quite kind of interested in this word kept popping up all the time. So you know, I asked a friend about it, and basically they're referring to the team as a cure-all for the headache of other teams. So we always seem to be the team that you know, when we play another team who are going through a slump, they always manage to kickstart their season against us. From an outsider's perspective, why do you think that might be, and how do you think Real Valladolid are perceived by other teams?
I mean, this season it's hard to say. It's not even like you could say you're a newly promoted team. I think if it's a newly promoted team, I think you've got plenty of reasons as to why, you know, you are maybe, you know, getting bullied by the teams that are needing the points more sometimes. But it's hard to say with Valladolid. We just seem it's maybe a generosity thing, maybe letting teams, you know, kickstart their seasons again with a win against ourselves. But even then, it's a hard one, because looking at your results before, you know, I think even Barcelona were on a bad run of form, and they managed to pick up a win against Valladolid just near the end of the last year. I don't know how the team see them. I don't even think the players would be able to understand why they're the ones that are that let teams get going again. It's quite a tricky one. It's quite a tricky one.
Yeah, just it's interesting that you mentioned the Barcelona match one there, because that's the one that really sticks out to me as just being incredibly frustrating, because you know Barcelona, they were struggling for them, you know, by their standards before they came to play us. They had drawn 2-2 with Valencia in the match before, you know, but they'd been beaten by Cadiz, they'd been beaten by Atletico Madrid, you know, drawing with Alaves, they'd lost the Clásico, they'd been beaten by Getafe. You know, it's by their standards, they were on a bit of a slide. And when they came to the Jose Zorrilla last year, they just beat us 1-0, and it was so close. I don't think we deserved to lose that game. So I thought, you know what, we had a decent result against Sevilla the previous week, where rescued a goal just towards the end of the match. You know, 3 minutes left, we scored the equaliser. I thought that was a good confidence booster after a cup win and after beating Osasuna. You know, that was a wee run of form going on there, but they just came in and treated Barcelona like royalty and just stood so far off them and just let Barcelona play their game. You know, and it only took them about 20 minutes or so to score. And it ended up being 3-0, and it could have been 5-6, 7-0, to be honest. We just offered nothing in terms of trying to, you know, get in about them and disrupt the rhythm and everything like that. So yeah, that was a really, really frustrating thing. And I was just wondering if it becomes a kind of a psychological problem that means that they're not able to take advantage of a team struggling and kick them when they're down. But I think they just respected Barcelona far too much. They made a better go of it against Valencia, but you know, still kind of came out empty handed. So it's frustrating. But we'll start to look ahead rather than looking at what's gone down. So next up for Valencia is Alcorcón in the Copa del Rey this weekend. So they're a second division side, and although they're struggling, they're 20th out of 22 teams down in Segunda. Do you feel this is a potential upset if Valencia don't tighten up and improve their game?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. We've seen a lot of upsets in the Copa del Rey already this season. I think Celta Vigo, was it possibly a Athletic Club as well? No, sorry, not a Athletic Club. There's been a couple of teams being knocked out as well by, you know, considerably quite smaller teams. Obviously, this is Alcorcón. You know, they did win it. They didn't play the weekend, sorry, but they did win their last game. They did beat Zaragoza 2-1 at home, but they haven't played since the 5th of January. So I think they are, you know, the where they are in the league, the fact that they haven't played for a a good couple of weeks now. I think if Valencia do get beat, then there is a couple of problems there, and I think it could be classed as quite an upset just because of the positioning, I think, and maybe Valencia are picking up form, you know, unbeaten in three now, I suppose. So I'd be quite disappointed if we did lose the game, presuming that all the weather is also passed by, you know, all the snow, because I think they were one of the games that were called off due to snow last weekend, so
yeah.
Not something that we should usually be speaking about with the Spanish football at this time of year, but I guess that's just how it's happened.
I know, and it just seems so strange that, you know, we're in the midst of the Copa del Rey in full flow, and we've not had last season's final yet, so hopefully that'll be something they can straighten out at some point as well. We're playing in the cup as well, but we have a team called Peña Deportivo, who I've had to sort of go onto Google to find out a little bit about, because they're not a very well-known team at all. But, you know, when you're Real Valladolid, anything can happen. And you were quite right when you said about Atletico Madrid, you know, they got knocked out in the last round to Cornea, I think it was, who played right outside Espanyol Stadium. And, you know, it was the kind of club that plays on small AstroTurf pitch with markings for other football pitches drawn, you know, five aside, that sort of thing, drawn on their field as well. So yeah, so that was a big cup upset. So yeah, I guess it can happen to anyone.
Oh yeah. But I think that's the way the cup format is now. It's just set out for big upsets, it seems, with the smaller teams getting the home tie every time.
Yeah, that's it. And teams will often raise their game against a team from the Primera, you know, to try and get themselves noticed, make a name for themselves. And that's the kind of thing that just keeps me awake at night, because teams are very much capable of knocking Real Valladolid out the cup. And I don't take anyone very lightly at all, especially given our propensity to not do very well. But I'm going to look at the next two league matches for Valencia, which are away at Osasuna. They've got a good record at El Sadar. And then you guys are hosting Atletico Madrid. That's a tough couple of games. There's a maybe a slight break in the middle where you're playing against Elche, who we've talked about their problems. But then there's another tricky away doubleheader against Athletic Club and Real Madrid. That's going to take us into the middle of February. What do you see Valencia's league position looking like by that point?
I think it could possibly be relatively the same. I think we can maybe get a result against Osasuna, but other than that, you know, away Athletic Madrid, they've been playing very well this season, and they're obviously very strong title contenders, so I can imagine they'll be out to get nothing but a win. I know they've got a couple of games in hand on the other teams, possibly Real Madrid and Barcelona, I think, you know, the two closest teams chasing them. So, I mean, on paper, you kind of think, well, it's kind of just an Athletic Madrid win. I guess you have to go there with optimism and hope that we can nick a result, but I don't think many teams have claimed points from Athletic Madrid at home this season, so I can imagine that one's not going to go down well. But Elche, you know, like you said earlier on, they can't really find a win just now, can they? So I would hope to win that one. And then Athletic Club and Real Madrid, both away, you know, it's looking tough. So on paper, looking at the fixtures, I think I'd maybe expect to be in the same position by the middle of February. But I would hope that, you know, there'd be points taken. Hopefully we've gained a few points and that we've moved slightly further away from the relegation zone if results go our way. But yeah, I think there's not going to be much movement between now and middle of February.
Yeah, it's a pretty tough 4 out of 5 games, but that's the kind of thing that if you can weather that storm, I guess it would probably start to get a little bit easier, because then you've got teams like Celta Vigo, Getafe coming up. You've got the kind of, well, two derbies in a row, actually. You've got Valencia against Villarreal in on the 7th of March, and then a week later you're away to Levante. So yeah, some pretty tasty fixtures coming up for Valencia, so we'll be watching with interest to see what the fortunes of Valencia are like. We spoke a little bit about the, you know, the big name players that have played for the club and moved on, but also how they develop players really well, but unfortunately, you know, end up maybe not being able to hang on to them. So I'm going to highlight two players. I'm going to ask you how important it is in retaining these talented young players, in particular, Yunus Musa and Kang In Lee. What are your thoughts on them and, you know, their importance to the club?
Kang In Lee is definitely a game changer. I think we noticed that on the game against Cardiff on the Monday night before we played on the Sunday. He didn't start the game. I think it was Kevin Gamero that started ahead of him, but he got injured, I think, maybe 32 minutes in, and Kangin came on. He's definitely a game changer, and he definitely deserves to start. He was more of a attacking midfielder role last season, but this season he seems to be more of a, he's like a striker type of player. It's a strange one. I didn't see him as a striker, but I mean, he's certainly playing well in that role, and I think our goals per game does average better out when we do start Kangin as in comparing to Gamero. So I think it is really important to hold on to him, and I think he has a lot of passion for the club as well. You can see it in his face and in his body actions, you know, when he scores, or, you know, just whenever he's playing, you can see there's real passion for Valencia in there from him. But Yunus Musa, he's quite a new one. You know, he came in the first game of the season and scored a couple of goals against Levante. So it was a great way to start off. I feel like he maybe just got taken up from the youth because, you know, all the players that were being sold at the time, all the uneasiness going on in the squad at the time. Javi Garcia had to pick players out of somewhere, and he had to go for Yunus Musa, which in the end has been quite a good pick-up, and over time I think he'll definitely develop to be a better player, but he's got some talent, and I think there was, I think it was after Serge Guardiola's header off the post on Sunday where he made the run up the pitch, and I think he kind of got shoved off the pitch a wee bit, but still managed to get past the defender and get the ball into the box to Vallejo, which, again, Masip saved at the end, but it was a great run. I think he should be starting more, but I guess Javi Garcia sees more than I do. I don't see the training camp or anything, so there's maybe something there that maybe needs worked on, but I think he's definitely a great prospect for the team, and hopefully we can keep a hold of him as well.
Yeah, he certainly looks a strong, PC player. That bit that you referred to, he went charging down the right flank, and then Ruben Alcaraz came across to try and challenge him, but Nacho, our left back, was in front of him, and yeah, it was the least subtle attempt at just body checking someone out of the park that I've ever seen. You know, it was kind of almost like an ice hockey style play, but Musa just seemed to bounce off him and just kept running forward, and I think Alcaraz got a bit of like a fright because he expected to not see Musa coming towards him, and he wasn't quick enough to react, and before you know, Musa was past him, and like you say, laid the ball off for Vallejo, who was pretty unlucky not to score, and it was a good save by Masip. So maybe he redeemed himself there. Who knows? I don't know. But two very exciting prospects for the future. I know that Kang and Lee scored the winner when the Real Valladolid and Valencia played at the Mestalla last season. He grabbed the winning goal in the 89th minute. So yeah, very talented player, and certainly one to keep tabs on. So that just about covers it for the Real Valladolid against Valencia match. So it's been great to speak with you again, Sean. Thanks so much for dropping by the Pucela Escocia podcast, and hopefully we'll get to do this again in May when the teams meet at Mestalla. Who knows, hopefully by then fans will be allowed back into the stadiums, which would be really good. Don't forget that you can follow Sean on Twitter. His address is at sneville23. That's sneville23. And I'll put a link up to that on my Twitter page when this episode goes out. So once again, thanks very much, Sean, and wishing you the best of luck for 2021, and the same to your team.
Thanks very much, Martin. Yep, same to you. Hopefully the best of luck for both of us, and hopefully we both stay up and we can do this again next season as well, twice a season. I'd be happy to do that.
Be good. It'd be good to catch it at the Mustai again sometime.
Well, we can hope for that, but when we get back, no one knows.
Okay. Thanks very much, Sean. Take care.
Thank you, Martin. Cheers.
And that was my interview with Aberdeen-based Valencia supporter Sean Neville from earlier on in the week. I must apologise for the terrible audio quality on my part of the discussion. I was using a temporary microphone which seemed to pick up the whistling noise of the heating system in our house. But I'd like to thank Sean for his time, not just with our chat, but also for his contribution to the preview article on the Pozzella Scotia website last weekend. Talking of websites, there is just time to shine the light on our account of the week on Twitter. Today it's the turn of Football España, which does exactly as it says on the tin. Quality coverage of the Spanish game with all angles covered from Segunda to Primera and the national side too, as well as newspapers and press conference notes. The writers on the website are brilliant, going in-depth on articles, and I'll mention a few of those writers over the coming weeks. So go and check out their website at football-espana.net or give them a follow on Twitter. Their address is at footballespana_. Don't forget that underscore at the end. In their Twitter bio, it reads, "The website for English-speaking fans of Spanish football." And that is what you get. All of their information can be found in the show notes to accompany this episode, and also our contact details will be there too. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to get in touch. That's all we have time for today. It would be great if you can make it along for the next episode. You can find this podcast on all of the usual outlets or check out our website at www.pozzellaescocia.com. Thanks for joining me. Stay safe and I'll see you next time.